countering China has become a central issue in President Joe Biden's rematch with the former President Donald Trump. As a race to retain or regain the White House continues, we must ask, what do the tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum imply politically? And what do we make of diplomatic efforts to alleviate tensions between the two largest economies in the world? For deeper insights, now we connect with Professor Kim Byung-ju of the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So it seems the U.S. is continuing to take trade actions against China in a series of moves meant to help cushion American manufacturers from low-cost imports. Now, particularly regarding the recently announced steel tariffs, what are some of the key points to note here?
Last Wednesday on his campaign trail, and one of the tightest, tightly competed states for his campaign, President Biden mentioned that he's considering the action of raising steel and aluminum tariffs from the current level of 7.5% to 25%. So that's about more than close to four times mm-hmm. increase. And this is important action because, you know, I was myself in Washington working as a trade lobbyist several decades ago, representing Korea's interest. But back then, you know, steel was a key issue, one of the issues, together with semiconductor and automobiles and so on. So steel is an issue area where United States has traditionally taken trade actions. And when there is a problem with trade, usually it's steel, because United States long time ago was once a world's leading steel maker, but that was long time ago. And since then, Japan, and after that Korea, has become one of the most competitive steel makers, and now China is really doing it big time. And this action against China that he proposed is a very symbolic and also as well as possibly substantive action declared. We do understand that Biden administration, the Democratic Party, a Democratic administration, is backed by trade union big time. And trade among the trade union, of course, the steelmaker is steelmakers compose one of the important, really very powerful element of that such union activities. So very symbolic and potentially very substantive. And one other thing that we should notice is an announcement that came out along the similar time as Biden announced the steel action. That is USTR, United States State Representative, announced that they are going to review the need to impose Super 301 on China's marine logistics and also shipbuilding industries. So Super 301, again, is a real big name from the time of the 1980s and 90s, during my time in Washington as well. Super 301 has been one of the most powerful tool of the U.S. trade action, and that it's a very it's strongly unilateral. That is what the other party proves or brings to the table doesn't matter. Once the United States decides on its own that there is unfair practice on the other side, they can announce unilaterally all these different kind of retaliatory sanctions. WTO for one does not accept Super 301 as a legitimate trade action, but now WTO is not working properly, and now the reemergence of Super 301 is an alarming aspect. A lot of trade experts point out. Donald Trump actually raised an action, that enacted Super 301 on China before, but he later retracted. And this is the first time that Biden administration is talking about Super 301. And so many eyes are watching all together. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But it's one of the strongest possible trade policy tools that United States can exercise. And they have pulled it out against China this time.
And we must, as always, question the timing and the location of the announcement. It seems, as you've alluded to, Professor Kim, it's worth noting the location where President Biden relayed his intent to triple tariffs on Chinese steel, the swing state of Pennsylvania. So to what extent are his actions related to the November U.S. presidential election?
Right. You know, this is not like ordinary government action taking care of their domestic industries. As I mentioned, labor unions are really important for Democratic Party's win. And within Democratic Party, steel makers are an important part. And you know, this is declining industry. United States steel making is not competitive in the world, and they tend to ask for protections all the time, as I mentioned. And because for Democratic Party's campaign needs labor union, they do actually need to take this kind of actions probably during this time of campaign, with the November election approaching really fast. One more thing is the issue of China. China is an easy target to mobilize voters against on both sides, Democratic Party as well as Republican Party. And we remember it was Donald Trump, the Republican candidate last time, who, when he won the White House, he was the one who fully introduced anti-China actions during the campaign. And, we thought, Biden may change its direction, but it's not. And so China has a unique characteristic as a target of political campaign from both sides. They have issue with their democracy, the way they run their political system there, lack of democracy. And they have issues with human rights. That's at home. But overseas also, they have aggression. A lot of people perceive it as an aggression. What they say about Taiwan, leaders openly talking about the possibility of invading Taiwan, and the actual actions that they take in the South China Sea, the taking over what most of other countries in the region believe is an open sea. So those kind of combined characteristics and actions at home and abroad make China as a very easy target, and bipartisan, both parties can actually take this stance, and that's what they're doing at the moment.
Professor Kim, then, if the presidential race is indeed one of the key drivers, can we say that maybe after the elections we will see U.S. trade actions against China simmer down?
Many people have that question, and to answer that question, one of the best ways is to recall what happened after Biden's election last time. When Biden got elected, general expectation was there will be kind of cooling down on U.S. stance against China, but not really, because of the reasons I mentioned, right? China being an easy target for criticism for what they do at home as well as abroad. And so we didn't see much of a change of posture, if you will, from Trump's Republican administration to Biden's Democratic administration. So with that reference, we could say not much of dramatic changes may be expected this time, even after the this November election. We'll have to wait and see on that side. But it doesn't seem very likely these days. Increasingly, U.S. government and experts are talking about China's so-called production-focused and subsidy and debt-driven economic model. This is kind of like an old model that we Koreans are even used to during the 70s and maybe early 80s and so on. It's kind of an old-style model of a state-driven industrialization and modernization, and China is still doing it. And with that model, there are increasing concerns, together with traditional sectors like steel and so on, but in the new sectors like electric vehicles and clean energy sector, clean energy services and products and so on, there are rising concerns. So looks like this is industrial competition that's continuing, and looks like the cooling down of it is not that easy to expect at any time.
No matter who wins the presidential race, that
Yeah,
is.
exactly.
We know that the Secretary of Treasury, Janet Yellen, recently called for China's self-restraint in handling excessive production capacity. How does this demand for cooperation work with the trade coercion we discussed so far, Professor Kim?
I think there are debates about what, how much is it a carrot and how much is a stick, and so on. Of course, Biden's announcement and U.S. Biden's announcement of steel tariff and the U.S. USTR's announcement on the Super 301 on other products, they of course come as a stick, and people were looking for any signs of Yellen, Janet Yellen, when she visited, was it 2 weeks ago, I guess, in China? They were looking for signs of some carrot, stick carrots, that they have to come together, they're saying. But observation is mixed. Some people say it's pretty much all sticks. And some people say, oh, there are some carrots and so on. If we take a look at it, for instance, she was talking tough. In terms of what I just mentioned, the production focused and the debt subsidy driven government activism in driving new industries, she was coming out really far and criticizing this kind of model. And she was saying China has an overcapacity in these key sectors, especially the future oriented ones like electric vehicles, solar panels, and semiconductors, and so on. And this overcapacity is causing the flooding in the global market and driving down other competitions. Mm-hmm. If you have, you know, the excessive capacity, you will probably most likely you'll be engaged in like a dumping activities, selling your goods in cheap prices, and that will kind of kill other competition. Then that is a concern. And so Janet Yellen was talking a lot about excessive capacity when she was in China 2 weeks ago in Guangzhou, and so that was a difficult. That was a typical stick for sure. Along with that, however, she was talking also a lot about financial sector, cooperation, like, U.S., China, Chinese government working together to address the issues of illicit money, illicit finance, global scale, and also the need for working together for climate change and so on. So kind of if I may say, kind of like a mix of stick and carrot, even though on the surface, because we had this news coming up on steel, industry tariff, and then Super 301 decided, Janet Yellen's words also sounded like a lot like a stick, but she had a considerable amount of stick carrots, I'm getting confused here this morning, but, you know, carrots, emphasizing cooperation. There were considerable amount of it in her words when she was sharing her words in China. That is my observation, at least.
Okay, a more balanced takeaway than what some other pundits may have suggested. Thank you for the balance. Let's also relate the economic confrontation to issues in security. The defense ministers of Washington and Beijing held a dialogue recently over a video conference. It's said to be the first substantive talk in nearly 18 months. So what do we make of this?
Last Tuesday, Lloyd Austin and Dong Jin of these two defense secretaries of the United States and China, they held, as you mentioned, the online dialogue last Tuesday. And this was noted because this is the first time that these defense chiefs of the G2, United States and China, held this dialogue since like a year and a half ago, almost more than that, 17 months ago. Last time they talked was in November 2022 in Cambodia. And since then, they haven't had conversation. What's happening is this is important because further back, 2022 August, when we had Nancy Pelosi at that time, the Speaker of the House, visiting Taiwan, since then China announced, the closing of all the important windows in terms of military cooperation between Beijing and Washington. And so it went on for a while, and one by one, like last December last year, dialogue between chiefs of joint staff began. And then January, they had a kind of like a defense policy coordination meeting between Washington and Beijing taking place. And there were other kind of, you know, actions taking place. And people were waiting for defense chiefs dialogue. And then so finally we got it. And this is definitely an encouraging sign that they're having this discussion and leaving behind the problem that Nancy Pelosi imposed on the bilateral relations. And so they were talking about, we learned that at this defense chiefs dialogue, the two sides were covering a lot of different grounds, including North Korea, including Ukraine, including, you know, Israel and Iran. And so they talked a lot about different issues around the world, which many observers take it as a positive sign for possible cooperation between the G2 on the security side, while all these trade actions were taking place and vicious words are flying in both directions on trade.
This talk is taking place in the eve of Secretary of State Tony Blinken visiting China this Wednesday for a four-day trip. What can we expect, and how does this move fit into the big picture, Professor Kim?
Right. Blinken is visiting China. I thought it was tomorrow, but maybe Wednesday. I'll have to check again. But, you know, like throughout the whole week, almost last time I was told was tomorrow, from tomorrow until Friday. And
I'll double check.
I will double check as well. We'll get back to the listeners. We share equal responsibilities. But anyway, not that it's that critically important, but his long visit, you know, several days visit, that side is important. And this is first time his first visit in 6 months. No, actually, my counting of it, 10 months. Yes, 10 months. That's considerable amount of time, amount of time, I guess. And they will be talking about all these issues that Lloyd was, Secretary Lloyd Austin was talking with his counter, overlap a lot. But for example, China's stance towards Russia with regard to Ukraine, and the Iran-Israel case, North Korea, and they will probably, they say, will add Taiwan and the South China Sea. Recently, you know, Philippines president stood along with Japanese Prime Minister and U.S. President, right? The trilateral stance against China. So that's something that needs to be taken care of. And Secretary Blinken is also expected to talk about trade as well. We'll have to see how that unfolds. But he will be covering a lot of different grounds. But the point being, once again, even though we see all this confrontation and rising tensions on the trade side and economic side in terms of rhetorics as well as actions, we see kind of like opposite direction, soothing and calming moves on the security side, and then diplomacy, where we see you know, more active dialogue taking place between Beijing and Washington. So in this day and age of all this, you know, unsettling things happening all around the world, seeing G2 policy leaders getting together to discuss more cooperation and so on is a little bit calming, I guess, to say the least.
All right, so we'll have to wait and see what unfolds in that four-day trip. The latest update seems to indicate a four-day trip starting Wednesday, Professor Kim. Thanks for double-checking.
You're right. Okay, thank you for the correction for our listeners as well.
We appreciate your insights. As always, we'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.